understandably, people are jittery, having just gone through this very traumatic experience.
The Indonesia tsunami death toll rises as aid rushes in. It's Wednesday, December 26th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello. Join us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, Australia remembers a yacht race disaster, special Mumbai stone carvings, Asia's economy of apples and whales, fixing a common birth defect, storing more power. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Indonesian disaster management officials say the death toll from Saturday's tsunami that struck parts of the west coast of Java now stands at 429 people. Heavy equipment is clearing out debris as crews search for any possible survivors following the devastating tsunami in between the islands of Sumatra and Java in the Sunda Straits. More than 1,400 people were injured after the wave struck without warning, destroying more than 1,000 structures, including homes. Authorities say more than 120 people are still missing in the coastal areas. VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke with Laura Nofontaine, spokesperson for the IFRC, the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies, based in Geneva.
Based on what our colleagues on the ground in Indonesia are telling us, the Indonesian Red Cross, which is working very closely with the Indonesian government and disaster management agency, is continuing to provide emergency aid and is assisting in search and rescue efforts to reach those who are affected by this tsunami and to help survivors.
What does that entail?
That entails providing life-saving support through first aid, providing shelter through tarpaulins, blankets, critical supplies such as clean water. Clean water is very important in the aftermath of a tsunami like this. They're also, the Red Cross has provided water trucks, ambulances, and medical crews to transport injured people to hospitals. They've also put together a team of orthopedic specialist doctors and five mobile medical teams because there's a lot of injured. They're seeing a lot of broken bones and severely injured survivors.
What are your people being told there about what the survivors say happened?
Well, survivors say that what was a perfectly peaceful Saturday evening turned into a terrible situation where powerful waves hit them and threw everything into chaos and created debris and broken infrastructure and tremendous amounts of injuries and loss of lives. And now we have survivors that are coming out and trying to assess the damage to their property and looking for loved ones. They're huddling in temporary shelters, but they are starting to emerge.
The reports that we are getting are saying that the government is asking people from beach communities and communities near the beaches to stay away and don't go back yet because of the possibility of another explosion on the nearby volcano and another silent tsunami, if you will. What do you hear about that?
That's true. We have heard also government warnings that people are to stay away from the shoreline until at least 7 a.m. on the 26th of December, if not longer, because of the risk of the possibility of other tidal waves, high tidal waves. And understandably, people are jittery, having just gone through this very traumatic experience.
There are also reports that an early warning system was not working. Did you hear anything about that?
You know, I mean, for the Red Cross, the focus is really on helping survivors and providing immediate care and making sure that lives are saved. So the issue of early warning will likely be looked into over the coming weeks. But I do want to say one thing, and that is that the Indonesians have suffered tremendous amounts of disasters like this, particularly this year with the earthquakes in Lombok and in the tsunami in Sulawesi. They are actually very well prepared for this kind of disaster. And the their capacity to prepare and respond to these disasters has grown exponentially with all this experience. So, you know, they kicked into action just almost immediately as soon as the tsunami struck, you know, helping people to evacuate, warning people to go to higher ground, and putting in place measures to save lives.
How many people are taking part in this, and how well is it coordinated?
We have nearly 120 Indonesian Red Cross volunteers in action in Bandung and Lampung provinces, where which were the both the hardest hit areas. Now, obviously, this is a provincial. It's a disaster that is the government believes it's at the provincial level, and the Indonesian government has a very strong capacity and manpower to handle this kind of emergency.
And you remember last time in the last tsunami after an earthquake that the government said only locally based or nationally based organizations can work with us. Everybody else has to go home. You remember that?
Yes. And from what I understand for the moment, and again, assessments are still ongoing and things may change, but for the moment, I believe the Indonesian government is looking at this as a provincial level emergency. I know the Indonesian Red Cross feels that right now they have the capacity and the resources to handle this without international support. But that, you know, I don't know if that'll change or not. You know, as the International Federation of the Red Cross, we are supporting the Indonesian Red Cross just to replenish supplies and things like that.
Panicked residents, police, and soldiers in one remote fishing village ran to higher ground Tuesday as emergency messages were broadcast over mosque speakers. It proved to be a false alarm. A similar frenzy broke out in another tsunami-stricken area located hours away. Meanwhile, Christmas celebrations were replaced by somber prayers as church leaders called on Christians across Indonesia, the world's most populous Muslim nation, to pray for tsunami victims. These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Indonesian church leaders call for prayers for tsunami victims. Former Nissan executive released from Tokyo jail. U.S. judge orders North Korea to pay $500 million in student's death. 8 killed in China as hijacked bus crashes into pedestrians. Thailand's legislature legalizes medical use of marijuana. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are always found on Facebook at VOA Asia. We also invite you to stop by the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. It has been 20 years since tragedy hit the Sydney to Hobart yacht race, one of the toughest ocean competitions in the world. 6 sailors died when a wild storm hit the fleet in 1998. Many yachts were forced out of the race, and dozens of competitors were winched to safety by helicopter. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
SO Rescue, this is Sienna. We have the boat in sight. Over.
It was Australia's biggest peacetime search and rescue effort as the Sydney to Hobart fleet was ambushed by a monstrous storm.
We are a bit cold and wet, and we're just waiting to get to Hobart.
While some yachts battled on, others capsized and sailors were tossed into the ocean. 6 were killed and dozens more were winched to safety in daring sea rescues.
Saw people picked up and hurled into parts of the boat, badly injuring themselves.
First concern was that everybody was safe on board the yacht. Second concern was to look after the yacht as much as possible. And our last concern was to worry about racing.
We were just getting rolled time after time. And that was really unsettling for the crew down below. And it was dangerous for the crew on top.
Michael Bellingham was also in the race in 1998. This year he's competing again, and he'll be the navigator on board the yacht Patrice. But the disaster 20 years ago is never far from his thoughts.
At its worst, we had incredibly big seas, we had horizontal wind, what highlights it for me often is the memory of seeing a container ship travelling from New Zealand, I think, to Melbourne. As the ship went over the waves, this is a giant big container ship, as the bow went down over the wave, you could see the propellers coming out the back spinning. So that kind of made you aware that these were pretty big waves, right?
Lindsay May's boat survived unscathed during that storm. He says the tragedy resulted in faster and more reliable weather updates, as well as a wholesale reform of safety standards.
The gear that we use is all designed about protecting the crew and making the sport safer. So we'll have a minute, and I hope that a lot of people will just reflect on the changes that have happened as a result, and that if anything good has come out of it is that we haven't lost anybody since. And we've had some pretty tough races. It's time to reflect and remember this is a tough game sometimes.
This year, for the first time, an all-female professional crew has been put together specifically for the Sydney to Hobart race and will compete on Wild Oats 10. The race record of 1 day, 9 hours and 15 minutes was set by the Australian boat Comanche in 2017. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Happening now in Asia, China's legislature is considering a law to ban local governments from forcing foreign companies to hand over technology, an issue that helped to spark Washington's tariff war with Beijing, which has long denied companies required to trade technology for market access. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us on this Wednesday for VOA Asia. Jews have been living in Mumbai for centuries, but since the partition of India in 1947, the Jewish population has dwindled significantly. About 4,000 Jews live in Mumbai today, compared to nearly 30,000 in the 1940s. One Muslim tombstone engraver specializes in carving writings in Hebrew to help members of the Jewish community continue to honor their dead. VOA's Rital Josi caught up with Mohammed Yassin in Mumbai.
This sprawling graveyard in the Worli area of Mumbai is one of the few Jewish cemeteries in the city. Over the last 5 decades, Jewish symbols and Hebrew epitaphs have been engraved on more than 1,000 tombstones by one man, Muhammad Yassin. The devout Muslim is one of the last engravers in Mumbai who can read and write Hebrew fluently.
He's been around for many years. He even knows our prayers. His Hebrew is very accurate. In fact, he knows more than us.
So many people come to me with names written in English. They tell me to write them in Hebrew. Not many know the language.
An expert engraver, Yassin is familiar with many Indian languages, including Hindi and Urdu. In 1968, he moved to Mumbai in search of a better living. He met an Israeli engraver who taught him Hebrew.
Aleph, Bay, Hey, Hey appear in both Urdu and Hebrew. Hebrew letters are different, but they are spoken the same way as in Urdu.
Yassin's son, Muhammad Islam, is also an engraver. He believes that handwritten engravings add a personal touch that new computerized methods do not offer.
There's a big difference between handwritten and computerized fonts. With hands, we can write as we please. Computerized fonts offer no such liberty.
As Yassin and Islam work on tombstone after tombstone, they find it difficult to hear news of conflict between Jews and Muslims in other parts of the world.
We get so much respect from Jews. Sometimes they even hug us, and we feel so happy. But when we hear of violence in Israel and Palestine, we feel very sad.
Most other artisans working in the cemetery are Hindus. Irrespective of their faiths, their primary job remains the same: laying the dead to rest with respect. Rital Joshi for VOA News, Mumbai.
Coming up, the business of apples and whales. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Special English. A way to learn American English and much more. Broadcasting a half hour of world news and features every day on radio. You can also find Special English on television and online at voaspecialenglish.com. For 50 years, helping people understand world events and the language and culture of America.
This news from VOA Asia. Indonesian disaster management officials say the death toll from Saturday's tsunami that struck parts of the west coast of Java now stands at 429. Rescue crews have turned to sniffer dogs and drones to search for any remaining survivors of the tsunami. At least 128 others remain missing. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, Apple loses business in China while hunting the largest mammals in the ocean remains big business. These are the topics on today's VOA Asia Business Scene with Skylar Ogden.
Some Apple iPhones have been removed from shelves in China after chipmaker Qualcomm won a court case saying Apple violated two of its software patents. The two patents involved software features for resizing photos and switching between apps on a phone. Apple tried to respond to the court order with a software update, but Qualcomm representatives say it's in violation of the court order. Jiang Hongyi is an attorney for Lexfield's law offices.
The Fuzhou Intermediate People's Court has made a clear adjudication that seven iPhone models are banned from being sold, which does not involve the iOS version. Legally speaking, even if Apple disagrees with the ban, it has to execute the ban, and in the meantime, it can apply for reconsideration according to normal legal procedures. But the execution of the ban cannot be stopped during that period.
Apple and Qualcomm have several patent infringement and royalty fee cases pending in a number of countries. At the heart of the dispute is whether or not Apple is violating Qualcomm patents by refusing to pay billions of dollars in technology licensing payments. Apple says it believes it is in compliance with the court's order. The company has filed a request for the court to reconsider its ruling. While no official confirmation has been made, Japan is expected to withdraw from the International Whaling Commission, the IWC, by the end of the year. The IWC was established in 1946 to manage and conserve the whale population. Now over 80 countries are members. Japan insists whale stocks have recovered and wants to officially resume commercial whaling. Officials there claim the practice is part of their tradition and that many coastal communities have been whaling for centuries. Iceland and Norway also still hunt for whales. Still, Japan's decision is likely to cause friction with anti-whaling countries, including Australia, the European Union, and the United States, all three of which already rejected Japan's last bid in September to return to commercial whaling. According to Japanese news agency Kyoto News, it's likely that the country will only whale in seas near Japan and its exclusive economic zone. If Japan does decide it wants to leave the IWC, it will have to send notification by the end of the year. It would then be able to leave officially by the end of June 2019. For VOA's Business Scene, I'm Skylar Ogden.
This news from VOA Asia. Public officials in Vietnam are looking for more ways to use Facebook, which is happy to oblige as governments around the world are demanding more accountability and transparency from the social media giant. Facebook has roughly 42 million members in Vietnam, nearly half the country. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. Now on VOA Asia, one of the most common birth defects throughout the world is a cleft lip. Babies born with a cleft lip may also have a cleft palate, where the roof of the mouth is split. These birth defects can be repaired surgically, but unless that's done, it can result in significant disabilities and even death. More from VOA's Carol Pearson.
Daniel Trulio's parents knew about his cleft lip and cleft palate before he was born.
The first thing I thought about was here in the United States, it's impossible. That only happens in other places of the world. That can't happen to us. I mean, we have four healthy children.
When we found out everything that was happening with Daniel when I was pregnant, we did talk to them about it. We told them he's going to look different than the other babies that you've seen. He's going to have a big space in his face. It's okay, though. When we first brought them to the hospital, they immediately loved him.
Daniel had a gap in his lip where the skin didn't grow together, and another gap in the roof of his mouth. In addition, he has a very small lower jaw. He had a hole cut into his windpipe, a tracheostomy, so he could breathe.
I associated that with smokers and, you know, older people that made bad decisions. I just feel like I was very, very ignorant prior to Daniel's birth.
For Daniel, it all seemed very normal.
He only cries when he's hurting. He's always smiling. He claps when he wakes up.
Daniel had his cleft palate repaired in May of 2017. He's now done with surgery until he's older.
My only hope, and I share this with my wife, is that he will find love in his life.
Our hope for his future is that he has a really happy, wonderful life, that he's able to accomplish his dreams and one day help other people and other children that go through what he's gone through in his early life.
As for other parents facing this challenge,
I would tell them that it's not anything to be scared about. When you finally see your baby, you love them just like any other baby.
The Trulios say Daniel has made them better people, better parents, and more aware of life's possibilities.
When we found out that we were having him with all these medical issues, we were really shocked and devastated, but then we felt that he was made, he was created that way from God for a special purpose. So he's just teaching us all about that.
Carol Pearson, VOA News, Greencastle, Pennsylvania.
Believe it or not, batteries have been around for just over 200 years. But don't think this technology is old-fashioned. Batteries are the future. A team of California scientists with support from the National Science Foundation are on the cutting edge of building a battery that lasts longer and holds more energy. VOA's Kevin Enix powers this report.
Lithium-ion batteries are the primary power source for most of our stuff. Generally, we take them for granted and grumble about how quickly they run down.
At a society level, I think people really think that a battery is a done deal, like it's old subject.
With support from the National Science Foundation, materials scientist Shirley Mung and her team at the University of California, San Diego are building a new generation of batteries made with sodium rather than lithium. She says batteries are still very much a work in progress.
The energy density of the batteries today can still be doubled or tripled.
The team is working with lithium batteries, but in the next few years, they plan to test new sodium batteries here too.
We want to use sodium instead of lithium because it has different properties, and also sodium is much more abundant.
More abundant means much cheaper. Lithium is expensive, but the sodium batteries of the future will be made of inexpensive, widely available materials.
Right now it's just in the lab, and we're working on figuring out how to make it hold more energy and last longer so that it can be used in your phone, in your car, or even to store energy for solar, for wind.
Making energy storage cheap is the dream. Today it's not really cost-effective for utilities to use batteries. They cost hundreds of dollars per kilowatt hour to operate. But sodium-ion batteries could bring that expense way down.
Then, you know, it will make economic sense for each household, for example, to have a storage unit in their house. They have solar on the roof. They can store the electrons during the day and use them at night.
They say this breakthrough technology is in reach with further research and development. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us all over the place. VOA Asia Facebook online and also at our website, voanews.com, where you can find our full-length programs from today and earlier. You'll also find us on iTunes and SoundCloud, and you'll find us on the radio. PSU Radio, Patani FM 107.25 at Prince of Songkla University in Thailand carries our program. Thanks to everyone there who listened today. We send our thanks out to Director Tracy Carter, Engineer Kelvin Fowler, Managing Editor Diane Gao, our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Have a terrific day.